past few weeks while my dad is away. And this morning we finished up looking at Galatians 3 and we started into Galatians 4. Today we're going to start in Galatians 4, verse 9, and we're actually going to cover the rest of the chapter. I've entitled this message, The Law versus the Promise. And we've been looking a lot at the differences between the law and the promise and what their purposes were. The law being that which was given to Moses and the promise being that which was promised originally to Abraham and which was fulfilled through Christ in the gospel message. And this morning we saw that the law is not worthless. God had a reason for giving the law. It's not worthless. It has a purpose. God didn't make a mistake when he gave it. Rather, the law has a very important plan, part in God's plan. The law was given to bring each of us to salvation as a schoolmaster brings a child to adulthood. An adult no longer needs to be under the schoolmaster to dictate how they live their life, and we no longer need to live under the law to attain righteousness before Christ. The law was to show us that need of Christ. Tonight we will find that returning to the law for righteousness after salvation is not a good thing. Even for the Gentile believers who never were under the Mosaic law, for them to go to the law is comparable to them returning to their past pagan worships systems. We will also see that by taking on a legalistic perversion of the gospel, the church at Galatia had lost the graciousness which they were known for. And finally, we will see that their legalistic gospel is not the descendant of Isaac like the Judaizers taught, but rather was better compared to Ishmael. For Isaac was born by promise, while Ishmael was born through the flesh. So in verses 8 through 11, let's go ahead and read Galatians 4, 8 through 11. It says, "Howbeit then, when ye knew not God, ye did service unto them which by nature are no gods. But now after that ye have known God, or rather known of God, how turn ye again to the weak and beggarly elements, whereunto ye desire again to be in bondage? Ye observe days and months and times and years. I am afraid of you, lest I have bestowed upon you labor in vain." Paul is now reminding, he's actually now specifically speaking to the Gentile believers in the church at Galatia. You see, what was going on in the church at Galatia was you had a number of Gentile believers who had gotten saved, and then these Judaizers had come in and said, hold on a minute, you can't just get saved, you've got to get circumcised, you've got to obey the law to be a good Christian. You can't just get saved and think you're done, you've got to do all these other things to obtain your salvation. That's what they were telling these Gentile believers. So Paul is now specifically addressing them. So far, he's been addressing the Jews from the Jewish perspective, and this is why this does not fit with what the promise is and all that stuff. But now he's going to say to the Gentiles, hold on a second, think about what you're doing. Well, God, through Paul, is addressing the entire church in Galatia in this epistle. Up until this point, the epistle has been mainly talking to the believers who came out of Judaism. Now Paul's going to address the Gentile believers. The Jewish believers have been shown how they were going back to which they had been freed from. However, the Gentile believers were never under the law in the sense that the Jewish believers had been. And so they might say, well, I'm not going back to the law. I was never under the law. So now we are going to see that by trying to follow the law, by including that in their idea of the gospel, it was as if the Gentile believers were going back to the very pagan worship systems that they had left when they converted to Christianity. Paul, in verse 1, says, "You served others. Before you were saved, you were servants of another master. You are now heirs of Christ, but at one time you were servants of other false gods." This implies that now that they are saved, they have a new master and are no longer under the authority of their old master. Just as we were under the law, but now we are freed from being under the law because of grace, so they were under their false gods, but they had been freed from that bondage. And he refers to them, he describes these false masters, these masters of theirs, as those who by nature are no gods. They're being worshipped as gods, but in reality, they are not a god. Before they were saved, most of the believers in Galatia, these Gentile believers, worshipped false gods and idols. Those things which are not a god, but they served them as if they were. It reminds me of the passage where one of the prophets talks about how their people are fashioning idols out of clay or gold or wood. And then they're saying this thing that they've created with their own hands. They're saying, okay, God, it's like, wait a second, you made that. How can that be God? And that's kind of the idea. They were serving false gods, gods that they had made with their hands and their imagination. So he says, before you were saved, you served false gods. But now that you are saved, you know God and you are known of God. He was telling them, you have a personal relationship with God. You have met the true God. And not only that, but he knows you. He is aware of you. He knows you personally. So why then do you turn back to the beggarly elements, the weak, the worst parts of the worship system from which you came out of? You see, pagan worship, these idol worships, it was also a very legalistic religion. It was a lot like, unfortunately, a lot like the prosperity gospel idea, where if I do A, B, and C, then my God will do E, F, and G. And they had special ceremonies for everything. They had certain ceremonies they did so that their crops would grow good. They had certain gods and certain ceremonies they worshiped so that their wife would have a child, so that it would rain, so that they would prosper, all these different things. And it was very, very clear, very, formulaic. If I do this, then I'm supposed to get this. There were specific sacrifices and actions required to receive specific blessings from their so-called gods. And this really is a pagan idea, not a biblical idea. If you look at the sacrifices in the Old Testament, it's never, okay, do this sacrifice so that you can get this. They did have certain sacrifices that they would offer in certain situations, but they were sacrifices of thanksgiving, sacrifices of contrition. I've sinned, Lord, please forgive my sin. God, thank you for how you've blessed me. So here's a sacrifice of, here's an offering of thanksgiving. I've sinned, here's an offering of, here's a sacrifice to forgive my sins, to take away the blemish. There were never specific rituals to receive specific blessings, unlike the pagan religions. And the pagan religions often had numerous gods. It wasn't like they were just worshiping one god. No, they were worshiping numerous, numerous gods. Here's your god of fertility, the goddess of fertility. Here's your goddess of the crops, and here's the god of war, and here's the god. And they were trying to worship all of them, and every single one of them had different ways you had to worship them. And if you didn't worship the right one in the right way, you might get cursed. And it's a very legalistic way to live. Oppressive as well, if you think about it. Always worried that you're going to offend some god that you might not even know about. And Paul's saying, the worst part of your old religion was its legalism, was these times, these days, all these things that you had to do to worship your gods. You had to do certain things to please them. You had to obey them and do all the right things. And if bad things happened to you, it was obviously because you did not properly please the gods. That was a very oppressive system to live under, wasn't it? And yet, and now Paul's going to say that, by trying to live under the law, they're basically going back to that. He says it is as if you seek to be put back under the bondage of the law by flesh. By trying to obey the law for their righteousness, they were putting themselves back into bondage. It might not have been under the exact same masters, but it was in essence the same thing. They had been freed from trying to attain righteousness by their works, by the works of their flesh. And now they were going back to that idea that to attain righteousness, you had to do certain things. He said, you observe days, times, months, years, and he's referring to many of all the different pagan holidays that there were that had to be observed at certain times in certain ways. But the Jewish people also had certain holidays that they felt were very important, and if you didn't observe them properly, you were not going to be righteous. If they did not observe these holidays properly, the gods would punish them. And that is not the relationship we have with God. It is not a tit-for-tat relationship where I do this and then God does this. I do this and God does this. No, we have a much better relationship with our God. He shows us grace. Aren't you glad he doesn't give us what we deserve all the time? And yet they were trying to earn the favor of God. We can't do that. We can't earn his favor. We can only accept it by the grace he's offered it to us. He said, and he's telling them, you have returned back to your legalistic ways just under a different name. And Paul's fear, he says, I am afraid of you. He was worried that maybe he didn't do a good enough job teaching them the gospel message. He was worried that maybe they had rejected the gospel message. He says that he was worried that his labor was in vain. Speaking of the labor that he had partaken of when he went to the church at Galatia and preached in the gospel and tried to edify them and teach them and ground them in the truth. And now he's worried, he's afraid that that labor was in vain because they're returning back to the legalistic ideas from which they had come, both the Jews and the Gentiles. And because of this, it seemed like perhaps all what Paul had done had been in vain, had been worthless, empty. Now Paul asks them a question, what happened to your grace? In verses 12 through 20, it reads, brethren, I beseech you, be as I am, for I am as ye are. Ye have not injured me at all. Ye know how through infirmity of the flesh I preached the gospel unto you at the first. And my temptation which was in my flesh ye despised not, nor rejected, but received me as an angel of God, even as Christ Jesus. Where is then the blessedness we spake of? Ye spake of. For I bear you record that if it had been possible, ye would have plucked out your own eyes and given them up to me. Am I therefore become your enemy because I tell you the truth? They zealously affect you, but not well. They would exclude you that ye might affect them. But it is good to be zealously affected always in a good thing. And not only when I am present with you, my little children, of whom I travail in birth again until Christ be formed in you, I desire to be present with you now and to change my voice, for I stand in doubt of you. Paul begins by reminding them of their relationship with him in the past, how they received him as a church. You see, we don't know the exact details of what was going on, but apparently when Paul first visited the church at Galatia, he had a very obvious problem in the flesh, it says, his temptation in the flesh. We don't know what it was. It could have been a physical infirmity, a temptation that he was struggling with, but whatever it was very obvious to everyone around him that Paul was going through this difficulty. And when he first came to the church in Galatia, first came to the Galatians and preached the gospel there, it says that they showed him grace and mercy. Instead of abhorring him and stepping back and be like, oh, stay away, which Paul said he wouldn't have been surprised if they had done so. Instead, they received him with open arms. They saw his infirmity in the flesh, that he was not sinless, he was not perfect, and they did not despise him. In spite of his temptation that they could see, they did not reject him because he was not perfect according to the law. When he first came there, they showed him grace just as God had showed everyone grace. And aren't we as Christians to be a mirror image of God? Are we not to be showing grace to others like Christ showed grace to us? And it says, they instead received Paul as an angel of God. Now, angel doesn't mean that they actually thought he was an angel. The word angel also means messenger. That is actually what the idea behind the word angel is, literally a messenger. So an angel of God is a messenger from God. And while we often think of them as angelic beings, in this passage, Paul's not saying, you received me as if I was an angelic being. He's saying, you received me as if I was a messenger from God. I had a message to you from God, you understood that, and you received me as such. Now, how are you going to receive somebody that you think has a message for you from God? You're probably going to receive them in a very nice way, aren't you? You're probably going to pamper them if you can. Treat them well. Listen to them attentively. And Paul says that that is how they received him when he first came to the church at Galatia. But where did that graciousness go? You spoke of it and you showed it. He says, they would have plucked, he says, I know that when I was there, you would have plucked out your own eyes to help me if you could have, which seems to indicate that perhaps his problem was a problem with his eyes. We don't know. There's a couple other things in the Bible that make it seem like that Paul had a physical infirmity with his eyes. This is one of those passages. But he says, you would have plucked out your own eyes for me if you could have. That's how much you cared for me. That's how much love you showed me, is I felt that you would have done anything for me. They treated Paul so well when he first came to them. Paul could tell they would have done anything for him. Their graciousness and acceptance of him was so incredible that it did not blow his mind to think that they would do things like pluck out their own eyes for him. And then Paul says, am I now your enemy? What a change. What a huge change in the church at Galatia. They went from being a church that showed Paul such graciousness, such love, such acceptance, to now being his enemy? What happened? The way they were treating him had changed. Before they treated him as if he was a messenger from God, and now they're treating him as if he's an enemy. He's not their friend. Get away, you know, oh, Paul's this horrible person. And there were many bad things being spoken of Paul in the church at Galatia. He says, am I your enemy because I tell you the truth? They had welcomed Paul earlier because he spoke the truth to them. And Paul was still preaching that very same truth that he had spoken to them at the beginning. And yet now they were treating him as an enemy over that very same truth that he had originally taught to them and was still teaching. And then Paul tells them, they zealously affect you. And when he's speaking of they, he's speaking of the Judaizers. They're the false teachers, the ones who had come teaching and preaching a perverted new gospel message, which was different from that which Paul had preached. They had set themselves in opposition to Paul, the ones who came in after Paul left. After Paul left, these men came in and they started teaching a different thing, and they started to set the people against Paul and against the true gospel message. And Paul is telling them, their teachings have affected you greatly. They had changed the church at Galatia. And Paul says, those aren't good changes. What I'm seeing in your church is not a good thing. They went from being an extremely gracious, loving church to being a hateful church. Later, we're going to look in, later in the book of Galatians in chapter 5 and 6, we see the fruits of the Spirit versus the fruits of the flesh. Guess which ones, guess where hate is. It's not a fruit of the Spirit, that's for sure. It says, they would exclude you in verse, in verse 17, it says, they zealously affect you, but not well. Yea, they would exclude you that ye might affect them. You see, they were trying to separate the church of Galatia from the rest of the body of believers, from all the other believers. They wanted to make them a separate group. Why? They were trying to carve out their own little kingdom. They wanted followers for themselves, not for God. They weren't trying to increase the kingdom of Christ. They were trying to increase their own little kingdom. It says that they might affect you. The gallows of these false teachers were not pure. They did not come to the church at Galatia with good, honorable intentions. Rather, they came with hidden intent. They wanted to make the church of Galatia their followers. They were looking for servants. They were looking for people to boss around. They wanted their own little club to run. They wanted to put these people under bondage to them. Well, how does that work? Well, because who was the one telling them what the law said they had to do? A lot of times, legalism, you just got to look back and you got to see who's teaching it. And most often, they're trying to keep you under bondage to them so that they can be over you in authority. They can take God's place in your life. And that's not how it should be. One sign of false teachers is that they are often more concerned with getting a following than teaching the truth. They want to be the ones in charge. They want to tell others how to live. They want to prosper off of other believers. You know, one of the key doctrines of our church as a Baptist church is that every person has the individual soul liberty to choose and to make decisions in regards to their faith with God. And they have the responsibility to do so. False teachers want to say, oh, no. You shouldn't read the Bible and try to figure out what it says. You should let me tell you what the Bible says. You should let me explain it to you, because if you try to figure out, you're just going to mess it up. So let me tell you. Anytime someone tells you to listen to what they have to say over what the Bible has to say, run away as fast as you can, because they're up to no good. Now, Paul does have a little aside. Zealousness can be a good thing. Zealotry is the idea of passion. It is good to have passion for a good thing, is it not? If you're passionate about your spouse, that's not bad. That's good. If you're passionate about God, that's not bad. That's good. But the problem with passion is if you have passion for the wrong thing, then yes, that can be very, very bad. Zealousness is good if it is towards good things. And God can and does use this for His benefit and for His purpose. But we must always make sure that our passion is being used for the right things. We must always make sure that our passion is being guided by the Word of God and not by the words of men. And Paul says, I've travailed after you. Paul is comparing his relationship to the church at Galatia to the relationship between a mother and child. Just as a mother goes through great pain to bring a child into this world, so Paul is saying that he went through great pain to see the church at Galatia born. And now, he feels like he is having to do it all over again because they are falling into legalism. He was having to go back to the old pains and trials he went through to plant the church. Is there anything that breaks a mother's heart more than seeing her child go the wrong direction? I don't think there is. Seeing a child go to prison because of something they have done, that breaks a mother's heart, does it not? And that is exactly what the church at Galatia was doing to Paul. They were breaking his heart because he raised them in the faith, and now they were going off to serve a false gospel. And Paul felt great pain as he saw them fall into heresy. And he says, I wish I could be with you so that I could change my voice towards you. Paul wanted to go to them. Maybe, you know, don't you always feel like if only I was there, I could have fixed that problem. I could have stopped something from happening. I could have changed something. You know, when your child makes a mistake or when a friend of yours gets in trouble and you weren't there to help them. Oh, man, if only I'd been there, that wouldn't have happened. And that's kind of how Paul is feeling. If only I could be there, maybe I could fix this problem, but he can't. All he can do is write a letter and hope for the best. And that's how we often have to do as well. So we see that the church at Galatia had changed. And it wasn't for the better. And finally, Paul is going to give us one more illustration about the son of promise versus the son of the flesh. In verses 21 to 31, you see these Judaizers had come into the church and they were teaching everyone that to be a Christian, a child of the promise, you needed to follow the law because the law is how you are a son of Isaac. That's how you attain unto being a son of Isaac, a son of the promise, because Isaac was the son of promise. And so Paul starts out in verse 21, he says, tell me, ye that desire to be under the law, do you not hear the law? So you guys that want to be under law, aren't you paying attention to what the law says? Do you really want that? Is that what you really want? I don't think it is. You know, have your kids ever asked you for something and you're thinking, boy, will they regret it if I give that to them? They may think they want it, but they really don't want it. They want a little more freedom, so you give them freedom and then give them the responsibility that comes along with that freedom. They're like, oh, I don't want that anymore. Because suddenly they're finding out that certain things come with other, you know, there's always other sides to every issue. And Paul's saying, you think you want to be under the law. You don't want to be under the law, trust me. So he says, For it is written that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondsmaid, the other by a free woman. So now Paul is going to explain to them exactly what being under the law would mean. But he who was of the bondwoman was born after the flesh, but he of the free woman was by promise. Which things are an allegory, for these are the two covenants. The one from Mount Sinai, which gendereth to bondage, which is Agar. For this Agar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, and answereth to Jerusalem, which now is, and is in bondage with her children. But Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the mother of us all. For it is written, Rejoice, thou barren that bearest not, break forth and cry, thou that travailest not. For the desolate hath many more children than she which hath an husband. Now we, brethren, as Isaac was, are the children of promise. But as then, he that was born after the flesh persecuteth him that was born after the spirit, even so it is now. Nevertheless, what saith the scripture? Cast out the bondwoman and her son, for the son of the bondwoman shall not be heir with the son of the free woman. So then, brethren, we are not children of the bondwoman, but of the free. You see, these Judaizers had come in saying that if you truly want to be a child of God, if you truly want to be an heir to the promise, then you have to obey the law. Because that's what the children of Isaac, the children of Abraham, are put under. Paul is saying, hold on a minute. That's the exact opposite of what is true. And he gives a couple of things. He says, there you have the son of the flesh and the son of the spirit. The son of the flesh was born by a bondwoman, a bondmaid, Hagar. She was the servant, the slave of Abraham. She was a maid, a servant of Abraham. Whereas the son of promise, Isaac, was born to a free woman, Sarah. She was the wife of Abraham. She was not Abraham's servant. She was his wife, his partner. Whereas Hagar was just Abraham's servant. Number two, Ishmael was born according to the flesh. He was born according to man's customs. You see, Abraham knew that God had promised him a seed, but he's looking at his wife and thinking, wow, she's getting old. There's no way she can give me a kid anymore. And so he said, well, I've got to do something about this. And Sarah's sitting there saying, well, I'm too old to give him children, so why don't you take my handmaid and have a child with her so that God's promise can be fulfilled? They were trying to do things. They were trying to help God fulfill his promise through the flesh. And that's how Ishmael was born. He was born because Abraham was trying to help God fulfill God's promise to Abraham. God doesn't need our help. God often asks us to do things, but it's not because he needs our help. It's because he wants to bless us through doing it. Isaac, on the other hand, was born by promise. God promised Abraham that he would have a seed. And after Ishmael was born, God told Abraham, that's not the seed that I promised you, Abraham. The seed I promised you is going to come from Sarah, who's too old to have children. It says the time of womanhood was past or something like that. She was done having children. She went through that time when every woman knows, okay, I'm done. I'm never having a kid again. It's physically impossible. Sarah had gone through that. She was 90-some years old. But God still caused her to give birth to Isaac. Because Isaac was the son of promise, not the son of the flesh. And then it talks about the covenant from Sinai. It says that Ishmael was born from, Agar was from Sinai. Agar is Hagar, the mother of Ishmael. The covenant from Sinai, the law in Arabia, in bondage. And he compares that to Isaac, the covenant from Jerusalem, the gospel, which is above, which is free. So Paul says, the children of promise are free from the law. Those under the law, those are the children of bondage. Those saved by faith are the children of promise. They share this with Isaac. They are free. They do not serve. They are heirs, not servants. The children of bondage persecute the children of promise. Ishmael persecuted and troubled Isaac. Abraham's heart was broken, or Sarah got very upset one day when she looked out the tent and saw Ishmael being mean to her son Isaac. Ishmael was was a teenager, and Isaac was just a little boy, and Ishmael was giving Isaac a hard time. And she saw that, and she said, went to Abraham and said, "Abraham, this can't be. You can't let him bully my child around," as any mother would say. And what happened? Abraham went to God, and God said, "Cast him out. Send him and his mother away, because they are not the heir of the promise." Now, God did take care of them, because he promised Abraham he would. But Ishmael was not the son of promise. Ishmael was the son of the flesh. And so, God told Abraham to cast the bondwoman and her son out. And the church needs to cast out the false teachers as well. Because in Galatia, these false teachers were the children of the law. They weren't children of faith. They were children of bondage. They were trying to put the church back under bondage. And Paul says, cast out the children of bondage. We are not children of the bondswoman. We are children of the free. With this allegory, God, through Paul, completely upends what these Judaizers had been teaching in the church at Galatia. When we put ourselves under the law for our righteousness, we are making ourselves children of bondage. We are putting ourselves back under the bondage from which we had been supposedly freed. That's a very strange and unusual thing to do, isn't it? If a man is released from prison because he has served his sentence, would it not be crazy for him to try to break back into jail so that he could go back to his jail cell and live there for the rest of his life? You'd be like, okay, something's wrong with that boy. Something's seriously wrong with that boy. Because he's free! That's why it's so crazy to see these kids still living with their parents when they're 35 years old, you know? They're supposed to be free from their parents in a sense, you know? They still respect them and honor them, but they're supposed to be striking it out on their own and being their own man and living the life that their parents raised them to be. But instead, they're still living under their parents' roof. And we think that looks strange. Well, that's the same thing as when we try to go back under the law and live according to the law to attain righteousness before the eyes of God and before the eyes of man. That's what we're doing. We're saying, I want to go back to that thing from which I've been freed. Why? That's crazy. When we as Christians, as a church, as the body of Christ, begin to focus more on the works of the flesh than the gifts of the Spirit, we fall into the trap that was encircling the church at Galatia. The Gentile believers in the church at Galatia should have replaced their legalistic pagan religion with the promise given by grace through Christ. Instead, they were now replacing it with another legalistic form of religion that was just as worldly and fleshly as the one that they had left behind. Paul could see a huge change in the very spirit of the church at Galatia. They had gone from being a very gracious, loving church to being a very hateful and harsh church. They had gone from being a place of encouragement and edification to being a place of judgmentalism and discouragement. This change deeply saddened Paul. And when we see such a change in another believer, or even worse, in ourselves or in our church, it should warn us that something is wrong. Those who wanted to be under the law had no idea what they were really asking for. They thought they were asking to be the heirs of Isaac, but in reality they were asking to be the heirs of Ishmael. We have seen many big-name leaders in legalistic churches fall in a very public way in the past few years. They could. Why? Because no man can keep righteous through the law. We will always fail. And when you're trying to be righteous according to the flesh, your flesh will always beat you. It will always win. These Judaizers wanted the church at Galatia to believe that circumcision and the law were necessary for salvation because they were necessary to be considered the descendants of Abraham and Isaac. We see, however, that the opposite is true. Ishmael was born of the flesh because Abraham had decided to help God out through the world's methods. Through his own flesh and his own understanding of the way things worked, Isaac, however, was born by promise. Nothing Abraham did allowed Isaac to be born. Only God could have caused a woman Sarah's age to conceive and give birth to a child. The son of flesh was cast out. The son of bondage was cast out. the son of promise, was made an heir to the kingdom. When we try to attain our righteousness through our flesh, we will always fail. So we must instead depend upon Christ for our righteousness. We need to have faith in the promise that he has given to us through Christ. For when we try to help God through our own fleshly methods, we will always fail and cause problems like Abraham did so long ago. We're children of the promise, not children of bondage. Let's act like it.